Blog Talk Radio.
Take my love, take my land, take me where I cannot stand. I don't care, I'm still free. You can't take the sky from me. Take me out to the black. Tell them I ain't coming back. Burn the land and boil the sea. You can't take the sky from me. There's no place I can see since I found serenity. You can't take the sky from me.
Live with Tex and Rex, irreverent, relevant, and radioactive conservatism with a bite. I'm your host, Rex, broadcasting to you from Nerd Prom Central.
And this is Tex, broadcasting to you from somewhere in Texas for some reason. Probably broadcasting from right behind you, but you never know. So, what do we got, Rex? What's on the agenda?
Well,
what important things are happening this week?
Well, we got an agenda. The agenda is we want to hear from you. We want to hear from the audience.
Oh, God, do we?
What's on your mind? What things conservative are concerning you, upsetting you, pissing you off? What things conservative are making you happy? What things conservative are you doing to further the reclamation of the liberal principles enshrined in the Declaration and the Constitution in this land of the lost? The call-in number is 646-649-1013. That's 646-649-1013. And we want to hear from you. In the meantime, Tex, here in the Imperial City, all of the prostitutes and the political monkeys, we're getting together to ham it up. And as Sarah Palin succinctly put it, all the ass clowns were in one place in D.C. I don't know if you caught any of that mess.
Typically I try to avoid it because it's sort of horrific. Actually, this venue is sort of a time-honored tradition in Washington, which is sort of like that Mark Russell piano show that he used to do. Remember, every election year he would do a little ditties about all the candidates that was just like generally horrific and nobody wanted to be there, but it became like a Washington tradition. And so everybody felt the obligation to show up and listen to this dreck. The correspondence dinner is kind of the exact same way. And if I'm not mistaken, I believe it's the correspondence dinner that gave birth to one of the most hideous things ever recorded on video, which was MC Rogue, actually, which was painful for all involved. I think, you know, perhaps painful most of all for Rogue himself, because I think the next day he woke up with like a massive hangover and he watched that video. It's like, oh, dear God, that's coming back to haunt. But, yeah, the Correspondents' Dinner just seems like a terrible, terrible event that maybe at one point had a purpose, but certainly no longer really seems to. Actually, it's kind of like most of the political events that we have in our country, like conventions, where at one point they serve like a vital, important function where there were real things going on, and now they've just become kind of stages and commercials for a bunch of pre-prepared speeches and jokes and God only knows what, a bunch of bull crap that nobody cares about and nobody watches. And that's by design, because the whole thing is to make sure that nothing's really going on of interest, and the whole machine just keeps grinding forward one horrific pun at a time at the Correspondents' Dinner. So what did you think? I mean, I guess you watched the thing.
That's a good guess, but no, I didn't. I couldn't handle it. I couldn't handle it. It was just awful. But what was striking to me was the similarity between the inane ass clown nerd prom and the George W. Bush presidential library opening in Texas, where all our ex-presidents, including the current occupant of the White House, were just, you know, yucking it up, you know, patting each other on the back. And I think the office of the presidency is important. It's in the Constitution. Our president, George Washington, certainly set the...
Our first president was a president.
Exactly. Our first president was a president. He set the precedent say that three times real fast, that, you know, of what the leadership of the executive branch should be. And I think that that's an office that does deserve respect. But, I mean, if you really think about it, the least important man in your life at any given moment should be the president of the United States. His job is to administer the executive branch of the government according to the legislative initiatives passed by a Congress that is bound by the Constitution and should be relatively unimportant to you except when you're actually trying to coordinate a national defense against an invading enemy. But it seems to me that we treat these guys like kings. I find that odd. Isn't that why we had a revolution in the first place?
Well, absolutely, and that's why George Washington said that he was not going to march on the Continental Congress after the end of the Revolutionary War and all the crap they put him through. He said, because we haven't fought a war to replace King George, to replace him with another King George. But the president should be the least important person in your life, unless, of course, he's your next-door neighbor and he's mowing, like, one extra stripe into your lawn and he's, like, you know, going for some Lebensraum or something. And then that might be important. But otherwise, it shouldn't be. But, yeah, we do tend to treat these people like kings or royalty. And actually, I mean, hell, look at the Bush dynasty, for God's sake, you know. I mean, they always talked about, you know, the reason that you don't want a king is, you know, monarchy has, you know, certain benefits, right, which you can enumerate. There are benefits of monarchy, but then there's also downsides of monarchy. And, you know, the founding fathers, they went through a whole bunch of these, one of which is that sometimes you may get an ass for a lion, the lion being the king and an ass being an ass. We're more familiar with the full form of that. But so you get some progeny that are just not that good. And, you know, I don't know. So I'm kind of seeing in some of the dynasties that we've built up here in our country that we keep electing the same sort of families over and over again. A lot of this is fed by the media. Like, notice this cult. I mean, I'll just go off on this for no particular reason. But what is this thing about Chelsea Clinton? Is she going to run? Will she ever run? Why would she run? She's like, sucks. Maybe she's a good person. I don't know anything about her. But just because her father was the president doesn't mean, like, we need to see her run. Like, Jimmy Carter's daughter, whatever name it was. What was Jimmy Carter's daughter's name? I forget.
I remember that. I remember his wife's name. Actually, you know what's, Jimmy Carter.
You don't know her name. That's the important thing.
Yeah. Do you know what Jimmy Carter the Key Bridge have in common?
What's that?
They both go in and out of Roslyn.
Oh, my God.
Sorry.
Shit.
Bad joke. I don't remember his daughter's name.
That was a D.C.-only joke. If you drive under the Roslyn Bridge, there's a rope hanging down under there for some reason. Somebody told me it was some sort of Masonic thing, and I've asked all these people, I was like, what is that supposed to mean? Because multiple people say that it's some sort of whatever, and nobody seems to know. But they all seem to agree that, oh, yeah, I've heard that there's something very significant about it. I don't know, maybe the rope, like a box of money falls down, or a key that leads to the national treasure that what's-his-face Nicolas Cage was finding or something. Anyway, but if you are in town and you do happen to be driving under the Key Bridge, look for that because it's there. I was there recently. It's still hanging there. Been there for years, as long as I lived in D.C. anyway.
Yeah, what's the point of a symbol if nobody knows what it symbolizes?
I don't know. Really, I just think it's like a random thing that was hard to get up there in the first place, and everybody's like, I don't want to cut that down. So, you know, anyway. But what were we talking about? Oh, yeah, Jimmy Carter. He actually was at the the presidential library speech thing, and he was kind of looking young. You know, he had those big Terminator-type specs on, and I wasn't sure if that was actually Carter or a Carter impersonator. He was looking like at peak health while he was there. You know, kind of standing up straight, his back was looking good. You know, I don't know, maybe it's bench pressing. Maybe all that working on houses, he's discovered the fountain of youth or something there. But anyway.
He's just overjoyed that that Obama's president.
Yeah, I think so. He was just happy to be up there. And he was like, wow, for the first time in a long time, I'm not the crappiest person on this stage. He should have just introduced Obama. He's like, yeah, well, you know, I'd like to introduce you to, you know, this other fool over here, this guy, and I'll just sit down. You can forget about me now. Actually, Carter had kind of, you know, I heard that he had a little crisis. I don't know. Maybe a catharsis is a form of crisis. Well, catharsis would be the release of the crisis. But he had this sort of revelation when Richard Nixon passed away, and there was the big funeral that was held for Richard Nixon and all the former presidents showed up at this event, and everyone was there eulogizing Richard Nixon and saying good things about him and, you know, how wonderful he was in terms of foreign policy, his lifelong dedication. And, you know, if you got an afternoon to kill, you know, and you're interested, I would go back and, you know, maybe watch some of what happened at Nixon's funeral, because it was definitely enlightening. But if you do that, I would also question your life choices and what the hell you're doing with your time. But if you saw it, they really were talking about some of the wonderful things that Nixon had done post his presidency. And Carter was sitting there thinking, you know, like, this guy was, you know, basically run out of Washington on a rail. I just got defeated in an election, and everybody thinks, like, I'm the worst president. And then here's all these people eulogizing him. And he kind of thought, well, what in the hell are they going to say about me? And I think I've heard that Rosalind Carter was kind of talking to Jimmy about that. And then that's when he started getting more and more involved back in the Palestinian peace process, because he thought the Camp David Accord was his big thing, big claim to fame. And so he thought he'd get more involved in that. And then, of course, you know, that led to All in the 90s and the noughts, or the naughties, if you call them that, the years that start with zeros, the naughties. So All of the 90s and the naughties, he was involved in the Mideast peace process to very little effect, and mostly just managed to screw up his reputation even further. So really it was Obama that saved Carter.
Yep. Yep, Obama bumped Carter off the bottom of the list, and I think that he's just ecstatic about that. And, you know, the only question that remains is, will Obama remain the worst president ever, or will we find someone worse for 2016? Our call-in number, folks, 646-649-1013. That's 646-649-1013. I apologize that we don't have Blog Talk Radio chat running. There's some technical problem with it. It is a chewing gum and toothpick technology, but if you want to chat about the show, just pop on Facebook and go to Coalition of Freedom, and you can start a chat right underneath the show posting there. And, Tex, speaking of Coalition of Freedom, we have our first call-in guest. You are live with Tex and Rex, Trog.
Hey!
How's it going?
What's going on, guys?
Is the snow finally melted up there in Alaska? I'm gonna guess no.
No, I'm not in Alaska anymore. My wife just showed me pictures where we lived, and they've got snow on the ground.
Oh, really?
Unbelievable.
Are you in an undisclosed location?
No, I moved out of Alaska quite a while ago.
Oh.
Yeah.
Well, you learn something new every day.
Washington. California too.
I too am in Washington. Washington District of Corruption.
Yeah, the other side of hell.
Yeah.
So I got on a little bit late, but you were talking about Nixon and Carter and Obama saving Carter. I was trying to kind of like get up, caught up mentally. The great Nixon era, boy, that was a unique time in our history. I think
yeah, gave us the EPA and OSHA.
Yeah, and more than
real
that. But I think that the GOP was down to like 18% of the population coming out of the Nixon era. You know.
Yeah.
So for those who don't understand that tough times happen, you know, they happen.
Well, I remember, I talked with somebody who lived through that period, and after Nixon resigned and everything, they said that basically that's the end of the Republican Party and it's gone for good. Goodbye. Time to close up shop, but that didn't happen. You know, they managed to spring back because, you know, they got some new blood into the end of the party, which the party now is not trying to do at all. So who knows if it has a future or not anymore.
Yeah, it's interesting. You know, I've actually seen a couple polls, not that I get focused on 2016 because I try not to. But, you know, Rand Paul keeps popping up there, and somebody actually ran I don't know if it was a New Hampshire, you know, straw poll, but they were saying, you know, Hillary keeps popping up in the conversation. And then I heard some stuff yesterday or the day before on people really saying that, you know, especially after this library, you know, event and Mama Bush being interviewed, you know, one of them said, oh, yeah, Bush, you know, Jeb should run. He'd be the best guy. And then Mama Bush said, no.
Sorry, I threw up in my mouth.
Yeah. But then I heard an interview on the radio or not the radio, but somewhere. I heard an interview where somebody said that if you took Jeb's record without his name, he would be the perfect candidate. And I'm thinking, what? Common Core? Sure. You know, I mean, these people freaking insane. Why do they – what amazes me, and I think this is something that people don't understand, is there are some real idiot a-holes, you know, that have a tremendous amount of influence in the upper echelons of the RNC who don't have a freaking clue what's going on in this country. You know, they want everybody to roll over on immigration reform. They want us to have, you know, just to – you know, go moderate all across the board, and that's going to be the solution to the party. And I'm like going, you idiots. That's why the party's crumbling, is because of this dynamics of these people who have come in and, you know, for some unknown reason, want to glorify the Rockefeller Republican mindset, which has been an absolute failure in this party every time that it's come up. You know, it's mind-boggling to me sometimes.
Yeah, well, I remember, Chris, back when I was in D.C., you know, talking with some people who were, you know, in the party, political appointees, that kind of stuff, and they were bragging about how the Republican Party was doing so good. They're here to say this after the 2004 election. You know, they're popping up their chest and everything. They're like, we've got a deep bench, you know. We've got all these superstars in our party, these guys with massive name recognition that everybody likes. We're talking about, you know, Rudy Giuliani. They're talking about Arnold Schwarzenegger. You know, who else? We have Tommy Thompson, you know, Fred Thompson, you know, all these other people. They were blowing up as these big guys who are going to be these big names in the party that were just towering. And then, you know, you look at Rudy Giuliani, and he starts running everything. And what does the party leadership do? They go and assassinate this guy's, you know, character. They make it so that he can't win. Oh, he's too liberal. He's too this. He'll never win. All this kind of stuff. They undermine the guy. And now, how many superstars the Republican Party got anymore? Apparently, their number one superstar right now, they think, is Jeb Bush. Jeez, you're really scraping the bottom of the barrel there. You know, at this point, they're like, hey, if you pick up this turd and you polish it, you can kind of see, you know, a little glint of gold in there. You know,
you
I mean,
polish it.
Come on. Like, if his name wasn't Jeb Bush, yeah, well, maybe if his name wasn't Jeb Bush, but no matter what it was, you know, he's still a Bush, and he's still in the family. He's still part of the royal family. You know, that's part of the freaking problem. You know,
what do you
polish
a turd with, anyway? It's a good question.
I don't know. I'm not sure I
would
try it.
Give it a shine? I don't know. I don't know.
Look, the thing, you know why? You know why Jeb Bush is attractive? Jeb Bush is attractive because, first of all, he's manageable. he'll do what the corporatists desire, what the neocons desire. I mean, you'll get more of the same that we've been getting, just with a different face. And, you know, maybe the liberals will be anti-war again for a while. But, you know, basically what's attractive about him is that it doesn't require any thought to go vote for a Bush or a Clinton.
Yeah.
And that's a lazy electorate wants.
Exactly. Oh, yeah. Well, I like those. I like those Bushes. I like those Clintons. Or that's my team, right? You know, so I got to support my team. And apparently my team runs Bushes. Their team runs Clintons. So I got to vote for a Bush or a Clinton, because God knows I can't be troubled to actually pay attention or know anything about how politics works. So it all comes down to branding. So just keep running Bushes, and that becomes the Republican brand, and just keep running Clintons, and that becomes the Democrat brand, which actually shocked the Clintons in 2008. They're pretty sure that they basically own the party, the Clinton name. And that's kind of what we've come to in the country, which is why people have more discussion than ever, and turning off in the country is sucking ass lately. So,
oh, it's terrible. It's terrible. normally I don't get too down about the things that I'm watching or reading. You know, I just kind of take it in and analyze it and keep moving forward. But I was just thinking about today, you know, coming into the show, just thinking about all the shit that's going on, you know, watching them rip this immigration policy apart. I mean, I never had much faith in it in the beginning. But as more and more gets revealed, and just going, oh, my God, you know, because I said very early on, I mean, I don't know that much about Rubio except what he did to Newt in Florida. Outside of that, I don't know that much about him. He has a pretty good voting record, whatever. Some people hate him. Some people, you know, like him. I'm kind of neutral. But I said a long time ago that, you know, this will kill him, you know, if he ever wants any kind of if he wants to be even considered a conservative, because what's in this bill is terrible, you know.
Wow.
And I mean, it's just amazing how little people understand about immigration. I mean, I've studied it all the way back to Britain, you know, when Britain controlled the colonies, and you know, we've had 7 or 8 other little amnesty bills since '86. People don't get it. You know, our border is open. The crime is accelerating. We've got gangs all the way up into northern cities. I mean, we can't even control our country. You know, we just had another bombing go off, and we're finding out that the FBI or the government was inept or part of it or, you know, whatever. You know, whatever the, you know, it's just, yeah, I mean, you just go, are you kidding me? Doesn't anybody have a brain? Can't you connect the dots? Our country is not safe. We're broke. It's falling apart. And these bastards in Congress, you know, and this 844-page bill is another Obamacare monstrosity that nobody can understand. They didn't even
have
the freaking border.
Have they read it?
Right.
They don't even know what's in it.
Right.
I mean, that's a crazy thing.
McCain and Schumer do, because they tried to push this crap down our throat a couple years ago.
Why would you read it?
Do the same thing
before? A lobbyist come in and tell you what it says in 5 minutes.
Oh my God,
yeah.
It's scary.
The thing's 3,000 pages long. That's the time. Just had the lobbyist who wrote it come in and say what it says. You're like, oh, okay. It only took you 5 minutes to tell me that. It'd take me like 2 months to read it, but okay, sure, I believe you now.
Well, if it's so easy to summarize it, why is it 844 fucking pages long?
Exactly.
And the thing is, and did you guys hear the head of the Border Patrol Union going, we've been trying to get in on the building of this bill, and they won't let us in the door. And here's the guys that have to secure the border that you know, boots on the ground, that understand the reality of what needs to done to secure that border. And the guy, and that group wasn't even part of writing the bill. I mean,
well,
that's
because those guys know too much. So you don't want experts like that there. They know too much. They're biased. They know what's going on. You want uninformed people writing the bills and voting on them.
Isn't that scary? I mean, doesn't that just is shocking?
Well, this is exactly why, you know, this idea that we live in a republic and some people want to turn it into a democracy and vice versa. And there's this whole debate between a republic and a democracy. And this faux debate between Republicans and Democrats, But in reality, it's an oligarchy. And what you have is a connected group of, quote, elites in both on Wall Street and Pennsylvania Avenue who are running the show, and then they use these congressmen and senators as their faces. They give them some power, some privilege, some position. They run, they raise money for them, and they get them out there, and then they just tell them what to do. And these guys are so overwhelmed because most of them, let's face it, are grossly incompetent. I mean, the fact is that rare is the Louis Gohmert, the Justin Amash, the Ted Cruz, the Rand Paul, right? Most of them are ignorant. They barely understand parliamentary procedure. They certainly don't understand the Constitution, and they have no idea that they've been elected to represent the people. Now, there's a confusion about that because some people think they're elected to represent the people, meaning whatever it is, the hell it is that I want, he's got to do for me. No, but he's got to uphold the Constitution for you. Whether it works out to your benefit or your disadvantage is irrelevant. The issue is that there are rules. In a republic, it is the rule of law. These people are entrusted to uphold the law, and the supreme secular law of the land is the Constitution, which very few of them even understand. You know, so when they get up there and they give these speeches and stuff, they don't know what they're saying, and they're only talking to you with what Frank Luntz told them to say, and you're cheering them on, and then they go behind doors and they vote for stuff that screws with you, and you're happy about it. And it's a little bit ridiculous. So we want to hear from you. We want to know what's pissing you off, what these guys are doing. Call in number 646-649-1013. That's 646-649-1013. I'd actually especially like to hear from people who are soured on Rand Paul. I'm seeing all sorts of stuff against Rand Paul from libertarians and conservatives, which is very strange to me. You know, like, I don't know, do you guys hear that he changed his position regarding drones? Did you guys hear that?
Yeah, right. Yeah.
I mean,
yeah,
you know, because he said, and this is exactly, if anybody paid attention to this filibuster, Trog, I know that you did. I was watching it all day. If you paid attention to what he said in the filibuster, he said, I am not against drones. Drones are just a tool like anything else, and I'm not even against using them domestically. If somebody is engaged in an attack or a crime or a violent crime where an American life or American lives are actually in danger at that moment, and you have a policeman there who can shoot him, you have an armed citizen who can shoot him, or you have a drone that can take him out, there is no due process for that. You just take them out. If someone's in the commission of a violent crime where someone else's life is in danger, they have given up their right to due process, and you kill them. Pretty simple.
Yeah.
He was never against that. What he simply said is that you cannot target people for assassination with a drone or anything else. You could use a sniper. You could use a bomb, whatever. It's poison. You cannot target American citizens for assassination. That was his point. He's never changed that position. So
it's
funny to me
that
libertarians and conservatives are looking for any reason to poo-poo on Rand Paul.
And it's not just that. It's also the concept of privacy, you know, and he had kind of hinted at that. And some of his more recent interviews, you know, he's, you know, with the camera issue, with the bombing, and including in the filibuster, was this issue of the government overstepping its bounds, individual liberty. He is a true libertarian when it comes to constitutional issues, not what libertarians think that, you know, socially we should be able to do whatever, marry our dog or whatever. You know what I mean? But in the concept of individual liberty, your rights that have been abused since the Patriot Act, and that's what Rand Paul stands for. I mean, I did not know that much about Rand Paul. I'm not a Rand Paul worshiper. I have studied the guy in the last couple months, and he's right flipping on. And people who look at drones as the issue are the same. To me, that's just an idiocy because, you know, that's like looking at a gun and saying a gun is evil. It's the same stupid conversation. Drones are not going to go away. Now, you may, on an individual basis in states and things, everybody's, you know, got different opinions about it. There's different laws coming out. You know, police are trying to get them, and then it gets voted down, and there's a lot of, uncomfortability with them. But, my God, we got, you know, 100 million cameras in this country as it is. You know, we got people that were being interviewed in New York going, oh, yeah, we should have more government cameras. And I'm thinking, well, you're stupid. Number one, government always abuses power, period. End of report. Look at the idiots in the TSA. Look at the way you're treated in a post office. You know, there's just something about that group of people, you know, who have that job that they can't get fired from. You know what I'm saying? It's always an abuse of power. And when you think about liberty, you know, whether it's the internet with CISPA or drone surveillance or, you know, targeted killings and assassinations. I mean, we could get into that argument even overseas with the number of innocent people that are being killed by our drone strikes. It's pretty sad. And it's definitely not making more friends around the world. Not that I, you know, am going to take that track that we make them. You know what I'm saying? But, you know, this whole thing of liberty is you got to ask yourself. There is a whole generation of people in this country who think, well, as long as I'm not doing anything wrong, if it makes me safer, I think it's okay. What the frick is wrong with people? I think that
they're
boiling
weak.
Water in the that boiling water in that frog, I think we're just about boiling, folks.
They're weak.
I'm sorry.
No, I'm saying they're weak. Here's a simple fact, okay? The idea that by having more security power for government makes you safer is just preposterous, okay? And the other idea that, you know, government is evil and destructive and dangerous and it's our enemy is just as stupid, okay? Government,
yeah,
you said it, you know, a drone is a drone, a gun is a gun, a party is a party. Government is government, okay? It is good if it's good government, and it's absolutely terrible if it's bad government. The very simple fact is that we were given a government structure that has competing spheres of power and dual sovereignty in order to use one force to check the other force.
Yeah.
It's never
check
perfect. There's always, yeah, there's always a push and pull, but that's up to you to fix that. It is up to you to participate in the process and assert your consent. Now, that doesn't mean that you can get whatever the hell you want, okay, because the whole thing is about doing what is right, not about doing what you want, because half the time what you want is probably wrong. You know, wouldn't it be nice to get $1 million check from the government every month that every other douchebag pays for and you can just live a nice life? Yeah, it doesn't work that way. Make your own
that
check.
That sounds like a congressman.
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, so understanding that is a pretty important thing. So if you want good government, first you need to get men and women of virtue to represent you as servants, not as masters. Number two, you need to respect the law. Now, that doesn't mean respect every stupid bureaucratic regulation, because most of them are deleterious and bad. I'm talking about respecting the laws and the constitutional structure that we have to defend liberty and freedom from oppression. Giving the government more power to provide you security because you're too much of a pussy to do it yourself is no excuse, okay? You are supposed to provide security for your family. You're supposed to work in tandem with other people in your community. And the federal government's responsibility is to have a police – well, not the federal government. The local government is supposed to have a policing force in order to respond, not prevent crimes. Okay, it's there to respond and to prosecute criminals. And that police force is to be drawn from the local community, because it is far more difficult for somebody who comes from that community to draw fire on their own unless that person's engaged in a crime. Additionally, the federal responsibility for security is merely to coordinate the people properly regulated in a militia against an attack. 9/11 was one such attack. What was our response? We went to Afghanistan. Fine. The Taliban was housing Al-Qaeda. No problem. Go in there, kick ass. My question is, why are we still there?
Well,
and why did we go into Iraq over that?
Somebody's got to keep those opium fields going.
Yeah, exactly.
Sorry.
No, it's true. I mean, that's the preposterous nature of it. So I think that, you know, we tend to get emotional and shrill and jump on one side or the other. You're like, oh, we can't have any government security because it destroys liberty. Well, that's not true. Okay, you need some kind of policing power. It's a legitimate function of government. And when policing power is done properly, it's a benefit, not a disaster. But you cannot cede your responsibility to provide for your own security by giving everything over to the government. That's just stupid. So, you know, whereby you have the liberals who want to give the government power over the economy and conservatives allegedly don't, conservatives want to give the government total power over security because somehow that's, you know, that makes me a patriotic, national defense, strong, you know, peace through strength guy. Well, if you want peace through strength, you don't go around beating everybody. You just let them know that you can.
Hey, you need to let Tex back in.
Oh, did we lose Tex? All right.
Yeah, I just
that?
Saw the chat.
Hey, can you hear me? Yeah, there we go.
Oh, there you go. Okay.
I was just thinking, man, he's been quiet for a while.
I think you're mashing buttons and you hung up on me, man.
I don't think so. I was nowhere near the console.
Oh, okay. All right. Well, it was serendipity then.
All right. Well, to you. Chime in on our crazy talk. By the way, real quick, 646-649-1013. That's the call-in number. We want to hear from you. Tonight's show is about what's on your mind, what's going on out there, you know, with you. Fill us in. Go ahead.
Kim, Kelly, Angela, Arlene, Randy, dial in. We're ready to chat. And then, you know, random strangers full of hate and bile, please call in. We'd love to hear from you, too. You know, they got an opinion. They got to share that, you know, with us as well. So I'll be honest. I was focused on trying to fix my technical problem, and you guys were bloviating about something. And what was the topic? And I'll tell you my opinion.
Well, I was running my mouth off about how, you know, government isn't good or bad. It's a tool. It's what you do with it, and how that the security the government provides, you know, there is a legitimate function for it, but you cannot give up your responsibility to provide for security and manage that risk by handing everything over to the government. So they got 600 million cameras, militarized police, and drones flying overhead to make you feel safe. Because got to tell you something, that doesn't make me feel safe.
Exactly. Well, I mean, the thing is, government's a necessary evil. You never get rid of it. You always have to have it. And anyone who, you know, believes that, oh, if we had absolute anarchy, everything would be better because, you know, groups of citizens would come together to solve our task together. Yeah, well, you know, some groups of citizens might actually do that. And then other sort of edgy loners with a large stockpile of weapons and, you know, a questionable group of followers, you know, will roll into town and, you know, easily take over whatever your trash disposal system happened to be that you worked out with your neighbors and quickly take over. Because if you get rid of government, you get rid of laws and authority, you also get rid of controls and constraints on laws and authority, and you quickly head right back into tyranny. So anarchy, actually the ancient Greeks had a belief system about governments, which is that each type of government evolves into the next form of government, where anarchy devolves into a tyranny, and a tyranny will devolve into an oligarchy, and oligarchy will eventually fall apart and become a republic would eventually fall apart and become a democracy, democracies fall apart and become ruled by the mob, and rule by the mob becomes essentially anarchy, which turns back into tyranny, and then you can run that circle in any direction as well. So, you know, this is just the way power is. You have one power system, and it's mutable. It changes over time, and right now we're in a system where we had a republic which has turned into an oligarchy, and our oligarchy is quickly turning into a rule by one because everything's being turned over to the federal government. So you either put the brakes on it and you try to turn it back the other direction, or you're on an express path until you're under the modern Roman emperor, if you will. So, you know, there's something to look forward to.
What do you mean?
And I'll leave you with that thought.
What do you mean look forward to? I mean, don't we effectively have that? I mean, look, here's the crazy thing. Is the Constitution, which is the supreme law of the land, doesn't matter if the people that are elected to defend it just abuse the hell out of it. It's that simple. You know, so you can sit there and cry in your little cereal, oh, you know, we had a constitution, but nobody respects it. Or you can say, well, you know, this is what it is, so, you know, I'm just a serf and a cog in this corporatist wheel. But the simple fact is that the only reason that the Constitution is there is to give you an objective standard of the rules by which we all agree to operate in advance so that you can manage your behavior and live your life the way that you want within those slight constraints of our common life together, okay? But if you don't know it, you don't respect it, you don't uphold it, and you don't hold them accountable to it, then it doesn't matter. You know, everybody's always going off the rails about term limits, right? We need term limits. If we had term limits, everything would be okay, really. Because if you had term limits, Rand Paul's term as senator would be up in 3 years. Justin Amash would be out of office next year. So, you know, it doesn't always work out the way that you want. But the simple fact is you do have term limits. The House is up for election every 2 years. The Senate, you know, an alternating cycles, you know, third to third to third, every 6 years, and the president every four. The problem is you keep saying you want term limits, and then you elect the same shitbags to office.
No kidding. I'm sorry.
No, go ahead.
Sorry. No, I it is amazing to me. I was listening to the Schumer, you know, spew his bull crap in a video when him and Gohmert, was it Gohmert? No, it was some, I don't remember who it was. They got into it over the immigration thing. No, it wasn't Gohmert, it was somebody else. But, you know, I'm just going, like, how long has this guy been in there? I mean, some of these people, I mean, McCain, Lindsey Graham, I'm thinking, what the hell is wrong with people? You're just walking down and checking the box because you're familiar with the name? Do people even read? Where in the hell do people even pay attention at all to the shit that's going on in this country?
Bieber's monkey got caught in Germany. That's important. you got to worry about
the cute polar bear in Germany. That's what I know is going on in Germany.
Well, yeah, plus, awesome. You know,
it's really cute.
And I got to know what kind of sneakers Kim Kardashian wears. Yeah, that's important.
Because I can buy them.
Here's the thing: you're easily distracted by all the fluff and the noise, only if you want to be. You're only as ignorant as you allow yourself. I get all this, the American public is ignorant, so they need to be managed a little bit more. And so, since they're not doing the right thing, someone has to tell them what to do. That is such a elitist, condescending attitude that has brought us to where we are. You know, the American public is only as ignorant as they choose to be. And you know what? The ignorant don't participate. They're not involved. Yeah, someone might be able to inspire them to sign on a form and then show up and pull a lever for some dickhead, okay? But the fact is that it is the active, the grassroots, the politically astute that are involved, and it's a battle between those of us that live down here on the ground and those that live in academic ivory towers that are trying to dictate to us what to do. And the mob is caught in the middle. So, you know, it's not that hard to edge. What's that?
I think it's time for crazy ideas. Crazy ideas how to fix it. So it's a crazy show tonight, so let's have some crazy ideas. Here's my crazy idea. Let's go back like the House of Representatives, and let's just have each representative represent whatever was originally the Constitution. What was it, 50,000?
30,000, I think.
Yeah, 35,000 people, I
35,
think.
35,000, yeah.
I mean, I guess we could look it up. We have the Internet, so we don't have to guess, but, you know, that would require me lifting my arms up off this chair and going to get so that's not going to happen, but 35,000. And so guess what that would do to the House of Representatives? Oh, my God, you'd have thousands and thousands of representatives, right? And then you have to have, like, a big tent outside the Congress. It would take forever to vote and everything, but you know what? That would be way better than what we have now because it would be harder to corrupt the system. And then everyone's voice would be heard, all the different districts, which is what the way it's supposed to work. It would be harder to basically pay off and control 435. It's easier to control 435 people in the House of Representatives than it would be the thousands of people that would come in as representatives of the people under that system. So I think we ought to go out. We ought to go that way. Let chaos reign. I mean,
that wouldn't be chaos. That would be very organized. Go ahead, Drew.
Sorry. Well, no, to add to it, the other thing that I've heard that was from some sharp people was, get them out of Washington with the technology and the Internet and video conferencing and everything else. Get them out of Washington, out of the corruption cycle. Send them back to their damn districts and have them work from home where they have to live under the laws that they pass.
Yeah, why not? Well,
I mean, it is mind-boggling.
Here's another.
That's poison hell where you guys live back there.
Yeah, let them vote virtually. Here's another crazy idea. Well, because we have all this telecommunications equipment, why not take all the departments of government and instead of having them all co-located right there in Washington, why not spread them out across the country? Because think about it, all those federal bureaucrats are way overpaid. They have these awesome salaries and everything, so it's like economic benefit to have them in different parts of the country. So you can put like EPA in California, you can put the Department of Defense in Denver, you can put Health and Human Services in Chicago, you know, you can put, you know, the Forestry Service in Oregon or something like that. I mean, just relocate them all. And then all of a sudden they don't have like a Washington mindset. There is no Washington mindset. They're dispersed across the country. And then all that taxpayer dollar is going and it's fertilizing the entire country of making the 10 counties around D.C. the wealthiest countries in America.
I'd rather we just relocate them all to where they belong. Moscow and Beijing. I mean, what do we need all these things for? You know, I mean, honestly, you know, this idea, you always get
that's
it, right?
Insourcing.
We have to be taxpayers because if you want services, you have to pay for them, and taxes is the way we pay for services. Where in the Constitution does it talk about the government providing services? What are these services that government is providing? Government isn't built to provide services. Government is built to protect the structure by which initiative of individuals will provide services to other individuals in the most efficient and best way possible. What services is it required for government to provide? I always hear this shit about, well, what about the children? They won't be educated. Really? I mean, first of all, if government education is your idea of a good education, you must really hate children. You know, or you know, the service is like, well, who will build the roads? Oh, right, because, you know, I'm sure, I'm positive that Walmart and Budweiser are not interested in having roads. So if the government didn't build the roads, I'm sure Walmart would shutter all its store and Budweiser would stop selling beer because they can't deliver because there are no roads. I mean, where do we get this idea that the government is the only one that can provide, quote, services? You know, oh, you just hate poor people. Poor people rely on government for services. Since when have poor people relied on government for services? Throughout history, poor people have relied on each other.
Yeah, it's mind-boggling what we've become. I mean, it is mind-boggling, you know, going all the way back to probably FDR, you know, in the New Deal, and how they made people dependent on government. Of course, you know, they didn't give them much in those days, and they actually had to work, you know what I mean, work programs, and it was supposed to be a temporary thing. But it set the standard for dependency, and it is mind-boggling to me how obvious it is what these people were, what their goal was. We have a dependency. I mean, it doesn't matter. I don't care. I mean, it's not just Republicans or Democrats. We have a dependency on both sides of the aisle, you know, whether it's corporatism or welfare or, you know, it's not a race-based, welfare is not a race issue. You know, I mean, it's across the board. I think more whites are on it than blacks. And it's just unbelievable how much money this is and the machine behind it. I mean, I don't know if we could ever get out of it. I don't know if half these people would be able to get up and go hold a damn job. I mean, we're dealing with, what, 4 or 5 generations now of people who can't equate work to making money. How do you change that?
Well, I mean, you change it the way you change anything else, okay, one person at a time. I mean, look, you and I have been over this before, and of course, you know, this will offend like half the audience because they're like, oh, you're saying that if you're not a Christian, you can't be an American. No, but there are certain principles that this country was founded on, which have been transmitted to us through Western civilization, which is Christian civilization. The chief one being, if you teach a man how to fish, you'll feed him for life. But if you only give him a fish, you'll feed him for one day. Okay, so people have been given fish. They've been given debit cards so that they can go buy their, you know, food stamps. They've been given social security checks. They've been given nationalized health care. They're given all this stuff. They get used to it. They can't think of an alternative. They don't know how to go about it. Well, our responsibility as citizens in a community living together is those of us who know how to do these things have to teach those who don't, as opposed to letting government be the dictating force. It's just that simple. If you want liberty, you're going to have to accept responsibility. If you don't want any responsibility, then you don't get to have liberty. It doesn't work any other way. I mean, if you want, you know, 3 square meals, hour in the yard, clothes, laundry, all that stuff at the job, go to prison. They give you all that stuff. You have no responsibility, really, other than trying not to get shivved or, you know, poked in the rear. And that's it. right? So if you want that kind of lifestyle, you can have it. Just commit a minor crime, and they'll put you in prison, and the rest of us will pay to keep you incarcerated. But if you want to live out here in the real world, suck it up. It's your responsibility. Speaking of responsibility, tell us what you think. 646-649-1013. That's 646-649-1013. What's on your mind about the state of affairs in this country? Does the conservative movement have any reason for existing anymore? Is there a reason to be conservative, or have we all just become, you know, Keynesian progressives and serfs? What's pissing you off? What are you doing about it? What's on your mind? Give us a call, 646-649-1013. Tex, what's pissing you off?
His phone.
Pretty much everything, actually, at the moment. But, you know, I was talking to somebody the other day. They're actually from the Middle East. And, you know, they're over here now. And they're sort of talking about the state of affairs. What if you lived in the Middle East, right? So we're talking about when the father Assad gave way to the son Assad, the current one is on his way out. And we're talking about the Middle East. And he said, you know, look, let me tell you something about the Middle East, all these dictators and everything over there. He said it would be like if Richard Nixon got elected, you know, president in 1968, and the dude's still running the country. Like, it's been since 68, and the guy's still running the place, you know.
Yes.
So we're kind of seeing a lot of the same thing with, you know, these sort of dynastic political families that keep coming up, as I mentioned on a show the other night, fact that I saw somewhere, which is no Republican presidential ticket has ever won since the 1920s that has not had either Richard Nixon or a Bush on it, which kind of, I think, tells you a little something about the current state of affairs. But in my conversation with my friend, you know, we're talking about why do people in power, why wouldn't they want things to work well? Why wouldn't they want the economy to be good? Why do they want to, you know, have a crappy economy? Is it because, you know, they're horrible people and they're just trying to increase their own power and they don't care what the effect it is on other people? Or is it because they're stupid and uninformed and they don't understand basics about economics and that what they're doing is harmful?
Yeah,
you know,
I think
we were
that's
never
part
really,
of it. I think that's
yes.
part of it.
Yeah, and we weren't really able to come up with a solution. But, you know, look, if you've been doing this, so say you're Obama, right? You've been doing this shit for 4 years, and it doesn't work, and unemployment is still at 7.7%. You're, like, trying to tell everybody, hey, 7.7%, that's, like, awesome, because otherwise it would be, like, 15% if I hadn't done my, you know, terrible job. I mean, I remember back when full employment was considered 3.2%, right? That was what they were saying it was back in the 80s. And then they moved it back in the 90s and said, oh, well, really, it's more like 4 or 5%, you know, is full employment, you know. And now they're moving it back even further. I mean, come on. At what point are you just lying to yourself? You know, so they know it's crap. They know it's a shit economy, and they don't know how to fix it. But wouldn't you just, I mean, this is to his credit. Bill Clinton was like, wow, this economy sucks ass, and what I'm doing is completely wrong. Oh, yeah, and everybody hates my gut. So I'm going to sit down with Newt Gingrich. I'm going to work on balancing the budget, and then, boom. I mean, Clinton could have got elected to a third term because of the deal that he struck with Newt Gingrich. The only reason Barack Obama was reelected, you know, to a second term was because he was running against Mitt Romney, and Mitt Romney is complete shit. Even people in Massachusetts were like, Mitt Romney, are you shitting me? Like, I'm not voting for that guy. So, you know.
Yeah. Well, it's true, but when you're asking me if they're incompetent or ignorant, I would argue it's both. But, you know, this idea, is it possible that they would intentionally want these things to happen? Sure it is. We have absolute evidence of this. Look at this quote, you know, sequestration, right, where we've gone back to 2010 spending levels. Ooh, as if 2010 was a banner year for fiscal restraint, right? And they're all panicking, and now all of a sudden airlines are getting delayed because we furloughed all the tin pushers, and so we've got to fix it. And they jumped on there, and they got on the floor, and they fixed it right away. Well, they didn't send any, you know, they didn't adjust the sequestration. It's still there. They just moved the money around from something less useless to something, you know, more useful. But the simple fact is they did it on purpose because they were given directives by the White House to find places to cut spending that would create the most chaos, pain, and pressure for the American public so that suddenly we're feeling inconvenienced, we're losing our benefits. So what we'll do is decide we need to give the government more money so that they can do these things better. Really? That's their thought process? And, you know, some people probably fall for that. Do it yourself.
Well, that's the thing that happens in government is if a program fails, it fails because it wasn't funded enough, not because it's like a horribly shitty idea that would never work in a million years. Like, wow, that thing went down in freaking flames. Let's fund that. That's how government makes decisions. And if something's really successful, like, hey, that's successful, I bet it would succeed with, you know, a 20% budget cut. Hey, I bet that would succeed with, like, another 20% budget cut. I bet that would be successful even if we cut the budget down to 5%. You know, because we need that money to fund this shit that doesn't work. That's seriously how government thinks.
I think we're at a point where, you know, we used to have a crisis or two, you know what I mean, to deal with. I mean, we're dealing with a dozen things at the same time right now. You know, whether it's terrorism or the borders or the drug war and the terrible effects of that, or the numbers of people on food stamp, or numbers of people in poverty or unemployment, or wars or threats of wars, or holy crap. You know, I mean, I know we've had, there's always multiple bad things going on all over the world at the same time. It's just life in the world with human beings on it, but it just seems like we're at a breaking point. And the question is whether, and the part I think that's frustrating to us, because we, us three have talked about this, you know, forever, it seems like, and that is, why in the hell do the Republicans keep bailing Obama out? You got a handful of guys. You got Rand and Cruz and Gohmert and, you know, Amash, and a handful of guys that are speaking the truth and fighting and exposing the lies and the crap on both sides of the aisles. And, you know, they get a lot of airtime, which is awesome, but they also get, it's nonstop. And you said this at the beginning of the show, you know, why are people going after Rand Paul, you know, on the drone issue? Well, you know, I some of it is just stupid people, but I really believe that strategy, you know, it's attacks that are done on purpose of infiltrators and trolls in social media and in the news, you know what I mean, acting, saying I'm a libertarian or I was a Ron Paul person and what Rand is doing is wrong, and, you know, I see it all the time on
different
groups and
articles.
That's an old communist
ploy.
Yeah, and, you know, we watched, you know, we knew Democrats did it, but when Romney camp did it, a lot of people don't understand, but a lot of the Romney consultants are still in there. You know, all that crap that we saw during the whole primary is still being done, and it's being turned on specifically Rand Paul, you know, because he's in the news and polls very high, you know, for
half the RNC are these CLEC lobbyists and consultants. And until you get rid of them, I mean, they're not going to change anything. Look, understand something. They don't give a shit about winning. They don't have any conservative principles. All they want
to
do is get paid.
They make a lot of money. Yeah.
They just want to get paid. And, you know, it's so again, we come back to this problem of rhinos, you know, this unbelievable mess. And frankly, I think there's a solution. You know, we got a lot of rhinos in the Republican Party. The Republican Party, thanks to, you know, the fact that all the state ballot access rules are controlled by Democrats and Republicans and they keep everybody out, there's only two parties on the national stage for now. Until you change the state rules, you're kind of stuck with this duopoly. And the only option you have for conservatives, like you mentioned, Rand Paul, Ted Cruz, Amash, Gohmert, is the Republican Party. And the fact is, these guys are being effective. These guys are being effective. I mean, look at the whole gun thing. Do you think for a half a second that this gun bill wouldn't have passed if it wasn't for the threat of a filibuster and for the actual conservatives standing up against McConnell and Boehner and Cantor and the
Look
rest of
the
leadership. What about the immigration bill? Do you think this immigration bill would be dead for now if it wasn't for the actual conservatives that you have? Because the leadership is all behind this thing because they think that if they somehow appeal to illegal aliens, that'll help grow the Republican base. Fucking delusional.
Idiot.
That is. You know, but here's
Idiot.
A simple fact. As
Idiot.
Of this week, I believe, in Mozambique National Park in Africa, poachers have made all the rhinos there, the rhinoceroses, extinct. So I propose we pass legislation to create a swap with Mozambique. They send us some of their gold. We'll send them all our rhinos, and they can repopulate the park. I mean, could you imagine little Johnny Boehner and little Eric Cantor frolicking in Mozambique, you know, in the savannah there, and just get out of our country? How's that for a solution?
Well, I'd like to spend some time in Mozambique. I've heard the sunny sky is aqua blue, and all the couples dancing cheek to cheek. It's very nice to stay a week or two, so I think they'd like it. I'm for it.
There you go. Problem solved. All right, folks. We got an hour of show left. Yeah, we got an hour of show left, and we're reminiscing with some of Bob Dylan songs. 646-649-1013. That's 646-649-1013. Let's hear from you. Call in. Tell us what's on your mind. Share your ideas. Disagree with ours. I don't know. I mean, we got this whole Mozambique Rhino thing going. Maybe that's something that we can work on. But, you know, what are you doing to advance the cause of conservatism, and what do you see as the problem? 646-649-1013. Guys, obviously we were just fooling around there, but you know, it's interesting to me.
Who's got a crazy idea?
Good to me.
It's so a crazy idea.
Sounded good to me.
I heard one that was really crazy recently.
Go.
You want to hear this one? I think this is
sure.
a bad one. But someone's saying that, you know, why do we have two senators for every state? You know, it's just double the cost. We ought to just eliminate it so that there's one senator for each state. Now, it's like, I think that's a bad idea, because then it's like that one senator speaks on behalf of the entire state. And now it's like he's almost equal to the governor or something, you know. So I think the best solution is actually something that Ron Paul had said, which is get rid of the 17th Amendment and go back to the state legislature should pick the senators. Right?
Bingo.
Because do you think the state legislatures are ever going to pick a senator that's going to vote for something that would transfer power away from the state to Washington? They would recall that dude in a heartbeat. And that right there is one of the most important breaks on federal power that we had. And as part of the progressive movement back at the turn of the century, we got rid of that break on federal power. And look at what the federal government has become in the absence of that.
How did they pull
power.
That off?
Well,
that.
They pulled it off because it's sold to people, and people still buy into this bullshit today, right, that it's more democratic. Why should a few elite state legislators get to decide who the state senator is? Why can't the people decide, right? That's the whole point. You do get to decide. You get to decide who your congressman is, and the state gets to decide who its senator is. The whole point is that the Constitution was created by the people and the states. You know, well, that doesn't sound very democratic. Right, it is, because the Constitution demands that every state government be Republican, small r in form. So you are guaranteed a Republican government. No one can set up a communist dictatorship as one of the 50 states and say, well, the people of my state wanted it, so that's what we have here. They all have to be Republican, small r governments. And your voice
and balance
in your state is far more powerful than your voice in Washington, D.C., and that's what's supposed to happen. When you vote for your local delegate or your local senator to go to your local state house, they hear you far more. They're more responsive to you because there are fewer constituents and they have to come back and live in your neighborhood. And then you tell them what kind of senator you want representing your state or your commonwealth, and that's how it's done. The progressives convinced us that, you know, the people at large, and why? Progressives love democracy. Because democracy is nothing more than mob rule. It does not protect minority rights in any way. It is mob rule, 51% or more, and you rule. So whoever rules the mob, whoever can sway the mob with bread and circuses and dancing with the douchebags and Cheetos and Diet Coke and all that shit, that's the person who will end up with all the power.
Right.
How the
Reminds
hell do you think a community
studies.
Organizer from Chicago got elected president twice?
Well, absolutely, and what you're talking about is power distance. And this goes back to what we were saying earlier about the House of Representatives and to the power of the Internet. I went and looked it up, and the Constitution actually originally said that the number of representatives shall not exceed one for every 30,000 people. So there you go. It's one for every 30,000. I mean, let's go back to that. You know, because then power distance is not that great. You're talking about power distance at the state level being closer than at the federal level because, I mean, let's be honest, does Washington, D.C. really care what you have to say about anything? No.
No.
Because you're basically nobody.
Well, and it seems to me that every program they try to shove down our throats is all done by, and Obama is a master at this, it's all done by a pre-campaign through the media, through the news, and then he flies around on our $150,000 an hour jet and campaigns and gets people riled up. I was actually watching some film footage of different people protesting to, you know, push immigration, and I'm going, this is nothing but a show. Nobody is even discussing the issues. I just posted an article of the cartel cutting a woman's head off and made a video out of it because she snitched. And I'm thinking, you people, nobody's discussing the crime, the violence, the insanity, the 60-plus thousand Mexicans that have died, you know, right across the border, and the fact that it's coming, you know, into a city near you. Or, in fact, it's probably already in a city near you. Or the fact that we have jihadists and you know, working their way up to South America and intertwining in these cartels. And you know, it's like that doesn't even get discussed. And you think, this is serious shit. And nobody even talks about it because they're so busy promoting the humanitarian aspect of it. And then Holder gets up there and says, you know, making illegals legals is a civil right. And you're like, you know, I don't know how people – it's a show. It's all reality TV, game show, American Idol. That's how they get things done in this country. That's kind of freaky.
That statement would have been laughed out of Washington years ago. But now you have an uninformed citizenry, and you have a press that is basically there to support the political establishment, not to report the news, who don't understand anything about the country. Well, or they don't care, and they're just like, yeah, well, that's right. I mean, this is one of the stupidest statements ever made by, well, I think any sort of political official ever, but certainly by an attorney general or a chief justice, not chief justice, but head of the Justice Department. Getting late. Anyway, one of the stupidest statements ever said, and, you know, here it passes almost without mention. Like, oh, yeah, that's some real crazy crap, he said. Well, whatever. Anyway, what's the next question? Nobody says anything. I mean,
well,
the people...
it's all about being polite.
Yeah, they should have jumped out of the chair. Like, what in the hell did you just say? I mean, you should have been laughed out of the room, but no. They're just like, okay, well, whatever. Next question. Anybody else got... Hey, the gentleman's time is adjourned. You know, it's all about process in Washington. I mean, I was there. I know everything is about the process and the process that you go through. Not like, hey, this is a terrible idea that's going through the process. Why doesn't somebody shut this down? Why doesn't somebody question this? Well, you know, because I don't want to stand out, you know. Same thing. Why do people re-elect Ryan Priebus at the stupid RNC committee? Well, because nobody wants to stand up and be the person who, you know, takes on that heavy burden and says, hey, I think this is like total bullshit, you know. Nobody wants that responsibility, so they sit in the back and they eat the smoked salmon, and, you know, they're like, yeah, it's a good meeting, it's pretty awesome, I'm, you know, I'm happy I flew in, and I'm meeting all these important people, so I feel important, so that's what's really good in life, you know.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, everything's going to hell.
Yep, and the point is that it's designed to amp up the pressure and overwhelm the system, and then you're going to get a collapse, and then, of course, because you've become so weak and so lazy and so dependent, you will run to the strong man who will make the pain go away. Well,
just,
we don't have to get to that point.
I ran
to
the bearded lady. That is not as effective.
There you go. We do not have to get to that point. The fact is that we've still got all the tools at our power. And remember something. You know, when we say consent of the governed, that doesn't mean that whatever you want is what the politicians have to deliver. Okay? So, You can only want what comports with the natural law and authentic human liberty. That's what the Constitution guarantees. What you need to do is stop sitting back on your ass and accepting what they tell you and demand from them that they do their job. Their principal job is not to go engage in some kind of debating society. Their principal job is not to go there and provide more services. Their principal job is not to go back there and figure out, well, what is the optimal rate of taxation to provide the most revenue? Because obviously we have a revenue problem because our spending is extra, is over our revenue. So we have to figure out a way to balance them without actually cutting spending. Their principal job is to defend and uphold the Constitution. That's
well,
their job.
There you go. Here, let me just, I just popped an article. Army says no to more tanks, but Congress insists. Now, this is the corruption thing. You know, you're talking about just kind of a rant program. I just read this article. the Congress, you know, who is controlled by the banks and the industrial war machine, you know, they're trying to shove $436 million of tanks and all this crap, you know, and down the Army's throat. And the Army keeps telling them, we don't need them. We don't want them. We'd rather spend the money in other ways. So that just shows you the insanity of what Eisenhower tried to explain on his when he was leaving office about the industrial war machine. You know, that this machine will take over our society and we will lose our society through it. And I think that's so important. I mean, we hesitantly got into the Second World War and we've never left.
Exactly. Well, it comes down to the number of jobs in the district. That's the deal.
Yeah.
So all these
you hear it every time.
I have 500 jobs in my district that depend on making this tank. And the thing the Army says is, look, they're coming out with the next generation of this tank in 2017. They have 4,400 of those, if I remember correctly. Or is it 2,400? Anyway, they have tons of these tanks, and we don't fight big land battles in Russia anymore. We have more tanks than we actually need. And so they're saying, hey, we don't really want to buy more of these tanks. What we'd like to do is in 2017, they'll have a more sophisticated version. Let's bank this money, and then we'll go buy the more sophisticated version in 2017.
Yeah,
but
it's all about lobbying.
Like, I need these jobs today. Yep.
Yeah, and so we're going to build things that we don't even use. I mean, my son, on his first tour, they went over there with a Bradley. I don't know if you know what that is, but it's a pretty heavy vehicle, 30-ton vehicle, and holds five guys, you know, some armaments on it and things like that. And they found out that they couldn't use it in those towns. They couldn't run patrols. It was just too damn big and cumbersome, and they were getting stuck all the time. And I got a ton of pictures on my computer of Bradley's, you know, getting stuck in the sand and getting stuck on bad streets and having to pull them out. And they, the next tour he went back, they weren't even using them. I mean, and it's just a massive expense. You know, we deal, especially in today's, I mean, yeah, you know, if we got in a full-scale war against China and Russia or whatever, you know, then you know, standing armies and big munitions. But again, most of our heavy stuff is done from the air anyway. You know,
an armored personnel carrier is a terrible idea. I mean, they use those things in Vietnam, right? The thing is, it's a driving target. They're like, oh, well, then we can move the guys there to the front line, and they won't be shot by all this machine gun fire. Yeah, they just get hit with, like, a huge shaped charge in the form of an RPG or something like that, which will penetrate the armor and will kill everybody inside the freaking thing. And so if you look back in Vietnam, the soldiers already realize that. That's why if you look at these pictures in Vietnam, they're always sitting on top of those armored personnel carriers. Those are APVs, armored personnel vehicles. They don't want to sit in the damn things because everybody in them dies. And yet we're still making them. We're still sending them out
on
the battlefield, and nobody wants to be in the damn thing.
That's corporatism. If you can secure yourself a government contract with no competition, forcing revenue to your business that's appropriated from all the people, then, you know, you're going to make money. It's immoral. It's unethical. It's inefficient.
$100
a driver. But it works. And here's the interesting thing.
Sounds awesome on paper. Sucks in reality.
Right. We've been so dumbed down that we apparently are incapable of thinking beyond stage one. We can only go with what we can see. We see a tank being built. We don't know if it's useful in war or not, but I know that the factory in town's operating, got a job with good benefits, so I'm pretty happy about that. What you don't see is what you don't get because of the misappropriated use. And if you don't understand this, which is a very simple concept, and it seems to just evade everybody, all right, pick up a copy of Henry Hazlitt's Economics in One Lesson, read just the chapter about the broken window fallacy, and it becomes absolutely clear to you. All right, just because you see the tank being built and there's a job provided probably makes you feel pretty good about the fact that your local economy is booming at the expense of everywhere else, but it doesn't tell you what the misappropriated use of capital is depriving you of. You know, we talk about how successful materially we've been in this country over the last 100 years, how we've made so many inventions and we've built up so much wealth. In fact, we have the fattest, most entertained poor people on the planet in this country.
Yeah.
Who have at least one television, cell phone, car, and a roof over their head, unlike most of the real poor people everywhere else.
And lots of phones. Lots of phones.
Yeah, but that wealth, okay, was created despite what government did. You will never know how much was not created, how many benefits were not provided, how many more people were not enhanced in their lifestyle, okay, because of the misappropriated funds, principally starting 100 years ago when we gave control of our entire money supply over to an international banking cartel, where we instituted an interest collection system called the income tax, which is illegal according to the Constitution, even with the 16th Amendment, and the 17th Amendment, which eliminated the representation of states in government. We've all lived under this system. Very few of us were actually alive before this happened, so it's just kind of, you know, like a fish swimming through water. It doesn't know it's in water because that's just what it's in, all right? You don't know that this isn't supposed to be that way. Well, it's not. And your fear is, well, but what if it's worse? What if this actual liberty is worse? What if free money is worse?
Yeah.
What if you know, we didn't pay taxes and the government wouldn't operate and it would shut down? And what if that's worse? Well, guess what?
You know,
it can't be any worse than what you got now.
That's what Romney was doing. I don't know if you guys remember that, but as soon as he stole the nomination, one of the things that he started saying was, well, we can't cut government because it'll be a negative effect. And that, I believe, is a very common thought across this country, that everybody is so afraid of trying to revert back to the way America should be run, that it's like there ain't no jobs. What would happen? All these people, if you laid them off from the government, they wouldn't find work, and then it would be worse. And that whole dynamics, you know what I'm saying? What I'm trying to explain in that concept? Go ahead.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, last week, Spain announced that unemployment in Spain is 27.2%, right? And the newspaper article went on to explain, this is Bloomberg, went on to explain that that's because of the government austerity programs, meaning budget cuts, that the government has been enacting that has caused this unemployment. Well, people were employed in unproductive endeavors. That's
they were getting
problem.
Paid to do shit.
Yeah,
and
they were getting paid
have
to do
more.
Shit.
And we have more of that. We have more of that than we've ever had in this country. And so people, you know, it just scares the hell out of people to think of the correction it would take to revert our economy, because we don't make anything anymore. China makes almost, you know, all of our basic goods and services. You know, what? How long would it take? What would that cycle be?
It would be so short.
Well, I agree.
Look,
I know.
And this
agree.
Is what people
you
don't understand. People think that. Yeah, because it's taken us, I don't know, over a decade to rebuild, the World Trade Center. It seems like it takes forever to do these things. Well, that's not because we're incapable or unable to do it. It is principally because you have a burdensome system of competing regulations that were never passed by Congress. These are regulations that are written by government lifers who have no reason to create these things other than to justify their own existence and keep collecting bonuses in their VIG. Okay, that's why these things don't happen. You just undo the burdens, okay, and you watch the economy turn around. Remember something, 1929, the so-called Great Depression, right, lasted all the way through World War II, right? And, of course, we're told, well, you know, war is good for the economy because it brought us out of the Depression. War didn't get you out of the Depression, you fucking idiot. It was the fact that you had to undo all of the regulatory restrictions in order to turn on the war machine. But the policies of the government, the FDR, communist, fascist New Deal program, okay, caused a recession in 1933 within the Depression. Now, the same forces were manufactured by the banksters back in 1920 and 1921, but since the Fed was so new, didn't have all the powers it needed, they kind of didn't get to do as much back then, and that recession was over within 18 months, and we got the roaring 20s.
I heard Europe actually kicked out of their recession quicker because partly that, but also in our country, that the government kept dicking around with it.
Yep.
You know, they kept sticking their dang fingers in the pie, trying to adjust everything and all these programs instead of getting the hell out of the way and letting Americans do what Americans are good at. You know,
yeah, the rest of the world had
free,
a depression.
Free enterprise.
The United States had a Great Depression because we kept screwing around with things. We kept interfering with the natural way that business operated. There was a book, God, that I listened to on tape, and I forget the name of it. They were talking about a tire manufacturer out in Ohio, and they were saying that if you weren't part of whatever the organization was, WPA, you know, they had all these, you know, alphabet soup of all this kind of crap, you couldn't get all these services, and people would come after you, and you had to unionize and everything. And this tire company, they had an innovation which was better than what Firestone was producing or something like that. It appealed to this niche market, but you had to sell your tire at a specific price, right? Okay, well, if you have to sell your tire at this specific price, they were undercutting Firestone, Bridgestone on price because they were a no-name brand, but they had this excellent innovation. And when they made them price their tire at the same price as Firestone, Bridgestone, basically they went out of business because all of a sudden they lost all their customers because their customers were buying it because it was a cheaper tire at a better price. That's what capitalism provides. High-quality price, high-quality product at a lower price, right? And they're like, okay, well, this is good because it keeps all the people at Firestone, Bridgestone employed. Well, yeah, but everybody in this factory lost their job, right? And so now you have more unemployed going out into the market. And guess what you have? Shitty tires, right? Here was a company that was making better tires at a lower price that would have been good all across the economy because how many consumers are there for tires in that, you know, day and age? The automobile was just coming around. People were owning more and more vehicles, and they could have had cheaper tires. They would have had more money.
You know,
this goes back to the broken window fallacy. Breaking somebody's window doesn't make them richer. Go ahead.
You know who really was really good at explaining, you know, like the analogy you just used, was Morton Friedman. When he used to be interviewed, he used to be able to just spit out all these examples of the difference between free market and, you know, government interference, and he was a master at telling those stories. We don't have people telling those stories anymore. You know,
they did a good job explaining how a pencil's made. But he was also all for having your tax withholding from your paycheck so that you wouldn't notice how big your tax bill was. So, let's not get carried away with how pro-free market Milton Friedman is. Look, it's real simple. Free market economics is just very simple. Okay, children understand it until you corrupt their minds with government school. Okay, it's a simple fact of doing something that benefits somebody else so that they will trade something that they value less and you value more for the thing that you have. It's just that simple. It's just free association and voluntary exchange. It's the most basic, simple structure of human society other than the family, which is, you know, they kind of go hand in hand. These are the civil institutions that make up our country. It is not the government that makes up our country. It is the free market and the institutions of civil society, chiefly the family and the church, that make up our society. Free markets are very simple. People are afraid of it only because they're lazy or because they want to garner profits without having to work for it or outcompete their competition. See, the most difficult thing in a free market is to actually succeed, because once you succeed, then somebody else is going to try to take you down. Once you get to the top, you don't want to be taken down, so then you go to your buddy who's in government and you say, hey, look, pass these regulations that benefit me and screw the other guy so that I can stay king of the hill even though I provide a lower quality product at a higher price now. Well, that's not the way that it's supposed to work, and you don't want it to work that way. You know, that's the beauty of the free market system. That's what allows people to aspire to more and to benefit more people. So people have this fear of the free market because they confuse corporatism with capitalism,
right?
And they think that somehow, you know, communism is this ideal. It's all a lie.
Yeah, and when you had an informed citizenry and people actually were paying attention to politics and cared about what was going on, if you had corrupt politicians, you will always have corrupt politicians, but you could call them out on it because you have enough honest politicians to say, like, you're only saying that because of whatever, and that gets out in the papers and everybody knows this guy basically is on the take, right? Don't reelect this guy. He's screwing everybody over. You know, people used to have pride in this country. They cared about it, right? Because it was a new country. It was a model for the rest of the world. Europe hadn't done anything like this. There were no democracies. It was an experiment in self-government. And we were showing the world that we could do it. And then we're a victim of our own success. And now, I mean, basically we've become almost as bad as the rest of the world, right? We still have the democratic form, right? We still have the forms of debate and everything, but in reality, everything's already agreed. It's agreed behind the scenes. This actually is what Augustus did when he took over. Augustus was looking at his adoptive father, Julius Caesar, who, you know, Julius Caesar had a lot of great ideas. Mostly his big idea was, hey, I should run everything. And everybody's like, hey, that sounds really great. I have a great idea. Your organs need more air holes, right? So they gave him a bunch of air holes over there at Pompey's Theater. And Augustus was like, hey, I've got a great idea. I don't want to have my organs aerated like my stepfather's was, or my adopted father's was. So what I'm going to do is I'll be the emperor, but I'll run it from behind the scenes, and I'll make sure that all the democratic forms of the Roman government continue to exist, and that the fact that I'm running everything behind the strings or behind the scenes is unknown. You know, I'm not going to go after the puppets. I'm going to go after the strings, and that's what he did. And so for a long time, people didn't realize that, you know, the Republic was long since dead and the Empire had taken over. As far as anybody knew, on the surface, everything continued to function, you know. And who knows, maybe we're in a similar situation now or have been for a long time. I mean, how would you even know? But, you know, that's where you get back to the fact that if you have people, an informed citizenry, if you have people who are elected to office who actually believe in the Constitution, they're people of virtue, and they will call out the bad apples. They will point out the bad actors. But the problem is, right now, you have a media. If you do that, they'll come after you. I mean, look at what's going on with Ted Cruz. Guy goes out and he's calling people out, and they just go after him, you know, to marginalize him. If you have one bad apple spoils the whole bunch. Well, if you got a whole barrel of bad apples, you put a good one in there, freaking game over, man. You know, so how do you fix it? I don't know. That's what they talk about, and, you know, looking at foreign governments and that sort of thing. Once a foreign government becomes corrupt, it's very hard to get the corruption out because it becomes part of the day-to-day existence. And the new people who come in, like, okay, yeah, well, that last government was corrupt. I'm not nearly as corrupt, you know, so instead of wanting $100, I only want $80, whatever it is.
Well, that's what you're seeing in Europe right now, you know, in Italy and Spain and everything else, is these people are, you know, the group that is taking over and people are taking control, but the groups that are taking control, you know, we wouldn't have voted in power 20 years ago.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I mean, our level of acceptance of this stuff is beyond pale. I mean, I've said this, my parents were just in town visiting and I was talking to, we were having these discussions, and I said, you know, it's just mind-boggling to me that we're even having this discussion at this era in my life, where, you know, I knew this was coming, but I didn't know it'd be here at this age, you know, this quickly. Things are accelerating, and the tragedies are happening so fast, and they're all over the place, and you wonder, you know, when I look across the board, whether it's, you know, the Middle East or what's going on in South America or our economy or, you know, we just had a bombing or whatever the case, you just look across the board and there's so many things happening at the same time. And the spin machine, you know, the news, when you read some of this stuff, what these people are saying, you're thinking, how do people even accept that? That's the part that's just mind-boggling to me. Are you kidding me? They just changed the story 12 times in Boston in 24 hours.
People accept it because here's the problem. And ultimately, this is what it always comes down to. And until you internalize this, grasp it, and share it with other people. And the way you share it with other people is, you know, just have the conversation we're having right now with friends, relatives, people on Facebook, yourself. This isn't complicated information. It just requires a little bit of thinking. Just avoid 1 hour of American moron or dancing with the douchebags or whatever, and just read something of substance once a week, and you'll get it. You can also share this show. Just go to our Facebook page, like the page. You'll get updates when we're broadcasting. And if you're in Blog Talk Radio, just right-click on the download link, and you get an MP3. You can burn a CD or send an email and share this conversation with people, because ultimately the problem is the only corruption that happens is the corruption that you allow to happen.
Bingo.
If you're easily duped or easily bribed, then you will get the kind of representation you're getting. Government will grow, and it'll control every aspect of your life. And then, so long as they're fucking with somebody else and not with you, you don't care, okay? So, for example, we've got this Chechen Muslim who bombed some people, and we're all pissed off about it, so let's just, you know, hang the son of a bitch, okay? Now,
if he in fact did this, and evidence seems to be that he is, if it's a false flag, I suspect that they merely allowed him and his older brother to do this because we've known about it for a long time. And after trillions of dollars and 10 years of fixing things through Department of Homeland Defense, we still can't catch these guys. So they're either allowing it to happen or they're grossly incompetent. Either way, okay, the fact is the kid, the 19-year-old kid, is an American citizen. You don't get to violate his rights simply because you don't like the horrible crime that he did. That's how the rule of law works, okay? So as long as you're willing to compromise on these things for whatever reason, you're pissed off, you're emotional, it benefits you, it hurts somebody else, whatever, you're going to keep getting more of this crap. So you got to clean yourself up first. Clean yourself up, sir. Get off the government's tit, okay? Stand up on your own. Help out your neighbor, and tell your representatives to get out of the business that they don't belong in. It's just that simple.
Pretty much with those dudes, there's more than enough information to convict them anyway. So why, I mean, they got cameras, they have an eye freaking witness. They got, I mean, you have them dead to rights. I mean, that's just, you know, why do you have to, oh, we're going to claim that they're enemy combatants and all this other kind of crap. You have them dead to rights under the system. You know, just go after them under the system. Just leave the rest of the crap. I mean, you know, that's the thing. You can't have the government going out and just saying, oh, well, I hate the crime, so I'm going to declare them outside the legal system. They're citizens, right? You know, I mean, unless there's proof that they were working internationally with some sort of network of whatever, you know, then you can't do that. And thus far, we don't know that that's the case. Now, of course, maybe they have some evidence that they haven't told us or whatever the hell the situation is, but look, they're citizens, they did this crap, it's illegal, it's wrong, they're fucking perverted, screwed up people. Just nail them to the wall using the system, you know? That's what we always heard under the Bush administration, right? When Bush is going after people like, oh, we have a great functioning U.S. citizen, why are we going after all these people for, you know, all these extra legal reasons and all this kind of crap, and now that it's under the Obama administration, oh, it's okay to do all this kind of crap. I mean, this goes back to the whole my team, your team crap. Look, they're citizens, use the Constitution, use the law, give them the protections that they have, and go after them because you've got them dead to rights, you know?
What happened to
and
all the human rights?
The example
the
of our system will win them over. Well, okay, well, now's an opportunity to do it. If you catch them on the battlefields of Afghanistan, those are totally enemy combatants, right? Anyway, sorry. You guys are all this. But
Chris, I think I know what happened to all those human rights liberals. They're hanging out with all those anti-war liberals since Obama got elected.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you know, you're like, that's how stupid this is, okay? You've been convinced, right, that the left is anti-war. They were against Bush and Cheney and their illegal wars, blah, blah, blah. And then Obama comes in and puts the Bush-Cheney neocon program on fucking steroids, and everybody's like, oh, this is cool because it's Obama. He's got a Nobel Peace Prize, and he's hip, and he's such a good orator, which I still don't understand because he could barely read off a teleprompter. And so now we're all quiet about it. And then, of course, you know, you've got the rank-and-file Republicans who, you know, like Lindsey Lightness Loafers Graham and John Stale Moss McCain are like, hey, we got to go kick everybody's ass. We got to go to war everywhere. We got to suspend rights because it's our safety. And
those guys
no.
are nuts.
No, no, and no. Okay, it's real simple, man. If somebody is invading your country, and guess what? This immigration bill is about a fucking invasion of our country. So don't give me this crap that you're pro-national defense and you want to go invade Syria. You know what? I don't give a crap about Syria. How about our border? That's your job. Fix that, you son of a bitch. Okay, the simple fact is that get your priorities straight. We don't need to go kicking everybody's ass around the world. Are there people trying to kill us? You're damn right that they are. Did we inspire them to do it? No, they were going to fucking do it anyway. Muslim jihadists have been trying to kill everybody who is not subscribed to their particular brand of Islam for 14 centuries. They're not going to stop. Okay? So what you need to do is be prepared to kick their ass when it's necessary, but you don't go poking around in everybody's business, poking a hornet's nest that you don't – people who live in the Middle East don't understand the Middle East. How the hell are we going to understand the Middle East? Go in there poking around things we don't understand and causing
and
all sorts
sure
of blowback.
And they sure don't want democracy.
Well, every time we give them democracy, the Muslims get in power and the Christians suffer. That's the same thing that we're doing in Syria now. We don't have the money. We don't have the blood. We don't have the damn interest.
Okay? Leave them to their own devices.
Don't.
Let them figure things out on their own. We have a problem here. We have a problem here. We have an insecure border, and I don't want to hear any of this crap about, well, you know, people should be freely able to move across the border and trade and blah, blah, blah. That's wonderful, except you're getting gangs, you're getting terrorists, you're getting diseases crossing our border. It is the government's responsibility. The federal government has a responsibility to protect the national border. Okay? That's what it's supposed to do. And when one out of four people in your country doesn't have a job and they're on food stamps and they're sucking on the government's teat and they're reducing the economy because they can't actually buy stuff with their own money and they're actually taking it from those who have money or putting us further in debt, then you need to stop inviting more people in until everybody in your country has a job and has some dignity and has some of their own money. That's how it works. Okay?
Well,
that's
you
what
also
you're supposed
have
to
stimulate.
Do.
You also have to, you know, the concept of immigration has always been a controlled flow because you have to simulate, you have to make sure everybody's educated, you have to make sure people can function in our society. You know, it takes a while. And now you're getting ready to dump in this 11 million figure ain't nothing. You know, we know that it's going to be huge numbers. And it, our system is not assimilating them well. And there's just so many factors that are not being discussed in this whole issue. This is a huge issue. And this 844-page monstrosity is a joke. And the more people who dig into it, people that I like to listen to that I respect, because obviously it's just like Obamacare. 5 years later, we're just now figuring it out. You know, you take Obamacare and implement it. You take this immigration reform, which is bullshit, and you throw that on top of it. I don't know how we're getting out the other end of this, folks. I really don't.
Well, I mean, we're going to get out of it when people get off their asses and actually start putting pressure on these morons, and we send more people in and reinforcements in 2014, you know, people to support Justin Amash and Louis Gohmert and Rand Paul,
Man.
Ted Cruz, and Mike Lee. Mike Lee just gave a great speech at the Heritage Foundation. I mean, you know, between Ted Cruz, Rand Paul, and Mike Lee, unfortunately, Mr. Lee is not the best orator, but his content was just spot on, and you should check it out because he was just he made a case for what conservatism is for. Because, see, what the Republican Party wants to do is react negatively to everything the progressives want to do while furthering the progressive agenda. Conservatism, okay, which, you know, everybody who hates the Republican Party blames conservatives when it's not us, it's the rhinos. And once we send them to Mozambique, we'll be okay. Conservatism is about giving you the opportunity to do what you want to do with your life to benefit yourself and to benefit others, unmolested by unnecessary government. That's
you know
what that's a simple premise.
You know what the problem is, Rex? I think that the challenge is that people equate conservatism with the Ryans, the Santorums. They think those are the conservatives, and that's what they use to stand up to point fingers at. You know, the whole Bush era. You know what I'm saying? I think, and
that's
you guys
Rove
heard me
was,
say this.
That's why Rove wanted to promote Santorum as the alternative to Romney. First, because he had no chance of winning, but second, because he's such a terrible example of conservatism that it would make Romney seem like, oh, the moderates are way better than these conservatives. Well, Rick Santorum, I'm sorry, as far as I'm concerned, he's not a conservative, and some people
not
may
at
go,
all.
Oh, no, he actually is, but screw you, he's not a conservative, he's a jerk.
Can we get through 1 week without talking about that shit stain? I mean...
Well, but the challenge is, you've heard me say this before,
I hate
conservatism has
saying.
Been co-opted. But conservatism as a word has been co-opted. So whenever they're, you know, throwing these negative points, you know, throughout the media... You know, and attacking people, that is not what conservatism represents. And that's the challenge. It's back to that thing I've talked about many times, messaging.
It's newspeak, it's newspeak. And Mike Lee talked about that. You know, basically it's what Orwell wrote about in 1984. Not the year 1984, the book 1984. If you haven't read it, you're missing out. It's kind of a blueprint of, well, actually Brave New World is more of a blueprint of what they're doing to you. But he wrote about the fact that if you pervert the language, then you pervert thought, and then you can adjust the language so that a heretical thought, in other words, the thought that goes against the state, can't even be had. And that's the point that we're getting to, because we react to things. Like someone says, I'm a libertarian, and if you happen to not be a libertarian, you freak out and suddenly think, oh, my God, it's a pot-smoking sodomite. We got to get him out of the party. Or someone says they're conservative, all of a sudden, oh, it's another neocon warhawk.
This kind of reactivity, this emotive, non-thinking moronity is the problem. We're Americans, for God's sake. Use your head, okay? Think through. Communicate with other people because, you see, they keep stirring the pot to keep us pitted against each other so that while we're too busy fighting with each other over, well, Rand Paul deviated from his father's position by 2 degrees and therefore fuck him. You know, it's that kind of stuff that keeps them in power. So just get over yourself. Get over yourself. Liberty is wonderful. It doesn't always work out for you because in liberty, you might fail. Hey, guess what? Failure is a great lesson. It teaches you how to be better and stronger, and other people can help you out, and when you're better off, you can help them out. That's the wonderful nature of it. Okay? So quit being so damn risk-averse, trading trading valuable liberty for a paltry sense of security, which is nothing more than making you a lab in a cage, a rat in a cage. Okay? So that's what it's about. And so get over these friggin' labels. You know, is Rand Paul a libertarian? Is he a conservative? Who cares? Rand Paul is a senator. Okay? He is a senator who's actually doing constitutional things and being effective about it in the Senate. Support him on that end. Will he run in 2016? Will he not run in 2016? Dude, I don't know that we're going to make it to 2016. So why don't you sack up and focus on what's coming first, 2014. In fact, take a look at the Commonwealth of Virginia and New Jersey. We have elections in 2013. And from what I understand, in the Commonwealth of Virginia, if you remember, in the Republican primary, there were only two contenders, Congressman Paul and that other douchebag, Rose Monster Romney. Why? Because Santorum and Gingrich were kicked off the ballot because of some onerous restrictions. Well, the Virginia legislature has fixed that. They've reduced the number of signatures from 10,000 to 5,000. They've made it easier on that level. And so what's happening here is that's inspired a movement. And now the Republicans, the conservative Republicans in Virginia, just gave us a $1.2 billion a year tax hike that is allegedly going to create jobs. Sounds like a Democratic idea, okay, are being challenged by more libertarian candidates than Democrats this year. Now, if the Republican Party looks at itself and asks itself a question, why the hell did that happen? Pretty friggin' simple. You're not being conservative. So, you know, get back in touch with reality. Get constitutional. Stand for liberty. Okay? So focus up, folks, and start working together, okay? People can work together in liberty because, for the most part, your community standards are set by your community. And what happens in Los Angeles and New York doesn't have to affect your neighborhood. But when you federalize everything, then New York, Los Angeles, and Washington, D.C. are going to decide everything for you. Mm-hmm. And that's the problem.
And then you get to pay for their mistakes.
Yep.
That's,
all right,
that's
gentlemen, we've got about
balance.
15 minutes left. We got about 15 minutes left. Open mic night turned out to be no mic night, even though we've got a lot of listeners. Someone's not calling in. I'm going to give you guys one last chance. 646-649-1013. I know you're out there because for some odd reason, Blog Talk Radio is actually reporting accurately tonight, and I've got some pretty big numbers, but my board usually lights up more than it is now. So last chance, 646-649-1013. 1-3.
People are like going, I can't keep up with these guys.
Yeah,
don't
kind
let
of
the radioactivity scare you. We still want to hear from you. We've got some
long-time
listeners, callers, friends of ours. So, you know, please call in if the mood takes you. We won't call you out by name, but happy to hear from you if you feel like dialing in tonight.
So,
you're up, Tex.
Yeah, go for it. Tell us about Bush's library. I'm
Bush's
just a leaf
library.
On the wind.
I went to the Rush concert here in Austin. That's what I got to say. No,
right.
I don't know. I haven't been over to Bush's library, but I'm interested to read their book and see what's going on over there. No, I don't know, presidential libraries. I've actually been to the Reagan Presidential Library, which I thought was kind of interesting, over in Simi Valley. That was a good one. So, you know, I don't know. Bush Presidential Library, if it's good, be a good draw addition to the collection.
But it just seems like, again, like a kind of a monument to this sort of, I don't know. Why do we have these things? I mean, I guess you have for, you have Monticello and you know, various other houses.
But Jefferson lived there.
Or Mount Vernon. Monticello.
That was his house. They didn't build it after he was president.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, that's just where he lived, so it's sort of a monument. But, you know, now we're building monuments to these guys. You know, I don't know. Isn't he always doing something in Crawford, Texas? Why isn't that his pile your books up there, man? Let me just put it there, and then we'll come visit later on, and we'll see your geothermal heat pumps, and we'll read your papers or whatever. Why do we need – what is all this stuff now? The Clinton Presidential Library, I mean, isn't that – I don't know, they built a thing like in Arkansas, isn't it some kind of pyramid-looking thing or something? I don't know.
Well, it could be. Maybe, you know, it's part of the Bilderberg conspiracy construct. But from what I understand, you can get a happy ending in the Oval Office at the Clinton Library.
I don't know. Maybe I'm down for that. Maybe I
should
do this.
You said there's a new book. What is it called? New World Order?
Yeah, it's called New World Order Retread. The same old shit we've been trying to sell you for years that you're not buying, but we're going to try it again. I mean, look, this is what irritates me about it, okay? This whole exaltation, this exaltation of the president to some godlike status or king status, right? You know, that they're so important because they run the country. When the fuck have they ever run the country? They run the executive branch of
the
federal government. Okay, he's like.
When's Obama ever in the office?
What's that?
When's Obama ever in the office?
Yeah, whatever. But I mean, the whole point is that the president is supposed to be the chief executive who runs the executive branch according to the rules that Congress passes within the framework of the Constitution. He doesn't run the country. Congress doesn't run the country. We run the country. And the fact is that that reality is still there. The only problem is between you running the country, basically running your community, which, you know, with involuntary trade, the invisible hand coordinates everything in the country runs, okay? The only thing between you and being able to do that are a bunch of unelected, lifer bureaucrats who have passed their own regulations because Congress has handed over its authority to draft law by giving them the power to draft whatever they want, and then they screw with you on a local basis. And here's the deal. The end result of this is going to be a war between the people and these bureaucrats, and it's going to be ugly. Why the hell do you think they're buying trillions of rounds of hollow point bullets? That is the end point. Now, it's not happening tomorrow. It's probably not happening next year. There's no need to freak out. Okay, we still have the levers of civilized power at our disposal. But if you don't use them now, it's going to get ugly later. And maybe you've been deer hunting a few times. Maybe you got some MREs stocked up at home. When the militarized police force comes for you, you don't stand a chance. So don't let it get to that point. Hold these people accountable now. Get active.
Yeah.
Go to party meetings. I don't care if they're alternate parties or Republican Party. Just understand something. At the federal level, it's a Republican game. At the local level, all bets are off. Any independent, alternate party, constitutional party, liberal, whatever works. Okay, that's how it works. You got to do both. If you abandon the Republican Party, then you hand it over to the rhinos and you hand the federal government over to the Democrats. Just that simple.
Yeah,
here's
just
some good
update.
News.
I'm looking at the Clinton Presidential Library. It does not look like a pyramid. It looks like a giant trailer. But anyway, enough of that. I mean, I'm just serious. If you go Google,
does it have an or, does it have an oral office? I mean, Oval Office.
I'm sure
an orifice. an orifice.
Does it have a Lewinsky bedroom?
It has big open spaces in the interior. Actually, this open space is so big, it's like there's no books in here at all. So I don't know. But I'm looking at this thing, it clearly is the interior of the Clinton Library, and it's just windows. It's like an empty room in here. Anyway, whatever. So, there's that, and whatever. So back to you guys. Sorry, I just want to update you.
No, that's cool.
Check the pictures. Make sure that
I'll go look in a minute. I just tripped over an article. Came out today. Senator Rand Paul, Mike Lee, and Ted Cruz now each appearing to be positioning themselves in the fight against the push for the gang 8 immigration bill. So it sounds like they're gonna get up and take this thing on head on.
Yeah, well, what's awesome. That gonna do to Marco Rubio? I mean, he's the champion of the thing, right? They've been putting his face out there on this.
You know what?
So they're throwing Rubio into the meat grinder. Meanwhile, they're pumping up Jeb Bush, 2 Florida guys. I don't know.
Yeah, that's kind of what I was thinking.
I think I
was kind of came to that same conclusion a couple days ago that, you know, one of the things that I thought was surprising, especially around the gun bill that was coming out, that monstrosity and bull crap, the abuse of the Second Amendment was, you know, I was noticing Rand was in the news constantly, and then he was in the news on the immigration bill. And I remember this thought that came across my mind going, well, where's Rubio? He's never in the news. Very seldom. It's almost as if they're holding him back, and then he just kind of pops up and comments on things here and there. And the first time I've seen him take a stand on anything is when he went out on that Sunday and hit all those talk show, you know, the Sunday shows and started pushing the immigration bill. But he is very seldom in the news about anything. So either they're, you know, going to sacrifice him or they're trying to hold back.
And they don't. They want to keep him a tabula rasa. Okay,
yeah,
they want to keep him a blank slate to bring to pour into him whatever, you know, focus tested Frank Luntz approved shit they've got going in 2016. That way he'll be whatever they want him to be. He's a malleable person. I mean, like in a sense, Rubio, he's going to be like the Paul Ryan of 2016. But even Paul Ryan has more substance than Rubio. Rubio is actually a lot like the Republicans Obama. He's an empty shell that they can pour whatever, you know, ideology they want into and run him as the young, charismatic, somewhat ethnic-looking, appeals to a broad array of people, you know, listens to Jay-Z and knows urban rap and he's got street cred and all this crap, okay? That's what this is about. But the fact is that the fact that Lee and Cruz and Rand keep standing up on these things is awesome. You know, are they jockeying for political position? Perhaps, but that's besides the point. That's a secondary issue. The principal issue is they're standing up for the Constitution. They're not standing up for Republicans. They're not even standing up for conservatives. They are standing up for the rule of law as the Constitution is. If you've got a problem with the Constitution, Mayor Bloomberg, you don't get to just change it. There is a process for amending it. It is called Article 5. Okay, and that's the process that you use. If you don't have respect for the rule of law, then it becomes might makes right. And that's why you end up with all this corruption. If
well,
you control the money supply, if you make it a true free money supply based on something precious like gold as opposed to just arbitrary paper, and you put that power back where it belongs in Congress where it's accountable, not given to some private banking cartel, and you follow the rules in the Constitution, things will work out for the best most of the time. That's what Lee and Cruz and Rand Paul are doing. So when I hear, you know, they're libertarians, they're wacko birds, they're conservatives, they're Republicans, it doesn't matter. Those are just labels. The fact is that they're standing up for the Constitution. If you have a problem with the U.S. Constitution and you live here under it, you don't belong
out.
You don't belong.
Yeah, get the hell out. Go to Europe.
Yeah.
That's exactly what this group is trying to take us to, is what Europe is. And what is amazing to me that anybody who has the ability to get past U.S. news and look at what's going on in Europe, that's where they want to take us, and it's falling the hell apart. I don't understand.
Europe's in complete collapse. You know, the unemployment rate in – Eastern Europe
too.
Is like 40%. The unemployment rate in Spain is 28%. I mean, and that's after years and years of socialism. How could they afford this level of socialism, right? Well, because we paid for their military, so they didn't have to have any military spending. So they plowed everything not into guns but into butter. And look at the end result. If you got rid of the entire U.S. military, we plowed everything into butter instead of guns, right? Guess what the net result is going to be? About 30% unemployment. Awesome. 1 in 3 people could not have a job. That's the end result of socialism. And we're heading down that path. We think this is the salvation. Like, oh, God, everything will be great. Everything will be free. Yeah, well, guess what? You won't be able to afford free either.
It's insane.
It's pretty insane. And for some reason, they act like we've got a better formula than the last failures before us. Or,
because they care more.
You know, it's just unbelievable.
The Roman emperors cared so much for the people. That's why they gave them bread and circuses. Well, they took all the power behind the scenes, and they had absolute power, and they could do whatever the hell they wanted because they cared so much. That's why
they controlled those mobs. Well,
yeah.
They controlled those mobs, and they had constant war. Same thing.
Exactly. Nonstop warfare in the Roman Empire, the Roman peace, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, essentially, I'm the dictator because I care so much about you. That's why I can't allow you to be free. I care too much for you. If you were free, you could get into trouble. I'm trying to save you from yourself, fool.
Well, they also controlled the grain supply, too, if I remember right, in the Roman Empire. That was always the way that they dealt with every crisis, was to make sure people got their basic subsistence while they went out and launched another war. Am I right, though?
Yeah, well, the province of Egypt, because of the structure of the Nile, no Roman general was allowed to go into Egypt unless the emperor had expressly approved it. So Egypt was essentially the private property of the emperor, because a single army could hole up at one of the cataracts, which were the waterfalls back then before they built the High Aswan Dam. They could hold up with one of the cataracts, and they could hold off the entire Roman army. And so that was the grain supply of Rome, and if somebody managed to control Egypt, they would be able to blackmail the entire empire. And so, they're like, well, you can't go to Egypt unless, as a general with an army, unless you have the express permission of the emperor. So control of the grain supply is very important. But, eventually the Roman Empire falls apart and they don't have control of the grain supply. They're lucky if they could feed anybody at all. And that's why Rome starts to become depopulated, and they eventually decide that Rome's in a terrible location given the crisis that they're facing. And why don't we move it to this natural fortress known as Constantinople, at the time was Byzantium. And they moved it over there, and they lasted another 1,000 years. So there you go.
All right,
history repeats itself.
Yeah, sure. That tends to rhyme. We're like in the last 3 minutes. We're probably still in overtime, but why don't we start bringing it home?
Okay.
Sure. I don't know where
I'm going to start.
But, we've been all over the place on this show, which is a good thing. A lot of things to talk about. And, we're just sitting here sort of in the latter days of things. Everyone's unhappy. You go talk to Democrats, they're unhappy. You go talk to Republicans, they're unhappy. If you go talk to Democrats, they blame Republicans. If you talk to Republicans, they blame Democrats, because nobody's opened their eyes enough to go blame their own team and realize that, hey, the problem really is that the country doesn't give a shit about the Constitution anymore, and it certainly doesn't care about limiting government, because everybody thinks, well, if the federal government could just do this, they could fix it. No, they can't. It doesn't work that way. If the federal government could just override all these controls on its authority, they would be able to go fix this problem. Well, no, because the federal government created that problem. If the federal government just acted within its limits, most of these problems wouldn't exist in the first place. But if you go talk to somebody about that today, everybody's like, that's crazy. You're talking crazy. And therein lies the problem. And so that's why people like Rand Paul, Justin Amash, all these other people that, we're mentioning tonight, Ted Cruz from our state, Gohmert, as well, they're talking about, hey, constitutional restrictions on the power of government. If we get back to that, I think that is the path to saving our country. That and sound money, you can solve 90% of these problems right away. If you get back to the limits on federal power that are enshrined in the Constitution, if you get back to sound money, most of the stuff will take care of itself. So all's not lost. You just need to go educate your fellow citizens, and unfortunately they're unwilling to be educated, and they're so stupid that all they're going to talk about is Democrats, rah, 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 the Republicans, rah, 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 And, hey, go watch the Sean Hannity show if you want to go see Republicans, rah, rah, rah. Well, that guy does. My asshole, right or wrong, that's his philosophy.
What did Sarah Palin call him, Rex? what was that term? You said you're trying to get the clip?
Ass clowns. Well, I think she tweeted it out, but ass clowns is what she called
them. I love her, man. She's awesome. Oh, earlier when I did the was reading that Breitbart article about you know, Rand and Cruz getting ready to go, you know, head to head on this immigration bill and take it to task. The title of that is Tea Party. Tea Party Senators. We elected in 2010, the Tea Party movement was this dynamic explosion across the country that everybody got behind. And it wasn't about social conservatism. It wasn't about Christianity. It was about fiscal responsibility and limited government. That was really the crux, you know, the core of the Tea Party. And these guys, and somewhere in the House, I don't know how it happened, but Boehner, they put Boehner in charge, and he put a boot on the neck of these Tea Party people, you know, and the Senate, you know, Rand Paul kind of jumps up, Cruz gets in there, Lee joins, you know, forces, a couple other guys, and they start doing what the hell we elected them for. It really isn't that dynamic of an event. This is what 2010 was all about. It's just that, you know, there's less, I don't know, what, a dozen of these guys and gals in the Senate and the House. And what it is they are going to be attacked by both sides of the aisle. This is what we elected in 2010. This is what we can add to and empower in 2014. And I think that's, you know, back to what, I mean, the whole, you know, the header on my group was all about that. 2014 is key. 2016 will be a knee-jerk reaction or a reflection of what happens in 2014, because you got to remember, Obamacare gets implemented, and it's going to crush this country. There's probably a war or two coming, you know, where we got the fight over the immigration bill. We just, you know, Cruz showed up at a Tea Party rally in Texas, and I watched a short video of it, and he was saying we are winning. The only reason that it doesn't feel like it is we haven't turned our country around. But I think it was very important what Cruz was talking about was he was saying, look at the attention we're getting. We just defeated gun control or people control, however you want to look at it. He goes, we are winning. He was enthusiastic, and that's the mindset that we need to get. Anyway, that was my input.
All right. Well, thank you for that, Chris. And you can catch up with Chris at Coalition of Freedom on Facebook. You know, here's the interesting thing. And this is, you know, let's get down to the, you know, tiny little details and nitpick and find everything and find the flaws and pick on people and fight with each other about, you know, little nitpicky issues. It's pointless. It's absolutely pointless to do that. That's exactly what they want, and that's exactly how the oligarchy and the federal Leviathan keeps growing. If you want to roll it back, you've got to find people who are willing to stand up and go into government and actually represent the Constitution as opposed to, you know, the run-of-the-mill, regular corporatist, statist expansion of the status quo, okay? Will they be perfect? No. Will they sometimes misspeak or say something that you misunderstood, or it'll be spun by the media, or perhaps you don't exactly agree with it and it's one of those areas where we actually have to have a debate? Yes, that's going to happen. That's wonderful. That's how we work things out. Okay, but if we're going to turn on the champions of the Constitution at the drop of a hat for the lamest little things, then all we're going to get is more Cantors and more Boehners and more Lindsey Grahams and more John McCains. That's not beneficial to anybody. And so long as the Republican Party keeps putting up things like that, you're going to keep getting more Obamas. If that's what you want, then keep doing what you're doing. But if you actually want the Constitution to be back in place, if you want it to restrain all of them, the good ones and the bad ones, because the Constitution restrains all government, then you're going to have to find those who are willing to step up. And if you don't have one in your area, maybe it's you. Get up and do it. But the fact is that it's the Constitution every time on every issue. Sometimes there is a legitimate place of debate to figure out how things work, like this whole thing with drones. First of all, I find this discussion of drones just really friggin' tedious. Rand Paul's filibuster was not about drones. It was about the Fourth and Fifth Amendment. A drone is just a tool. Now, for the most part, it's an inefficient tool. It can only do two things. It can either kill, and usually cause a lot of collateral damage, or it can spy. Now, if there's a warrant, a legitimate reason to observe somebody because we believe that they're up to something that could be dangerous to people, then you go ahead to a judge and you get the warrant and you can use the drone. If it's to take them out, well, guess what? The only time it would be legitimate to take somebody out in this country with a drone is if they're in the middle of a commission of a crime that's violent that could put other people's lives in danger. I don't know how you scramble a drone that fast. Generally speaking, the first responders are going to be the people at that establishment or the home who are armed by the second, the rights guaranteed by the Second Amendment that Rand Paul stood up for, or it's going to be, you know, police responders, you know. And in the commission of a crime where other people's lives are in danger, the police have always had the right to kill. Now, do they abuse that? Yes, there are some bad cops. It sucks, but guess what? There's bad people everywhere. That's life. Deal with it. Generally speaking, though, that is not how it works. They try to apprehend, and if they can't, then they kill. The best way to ensure that is to make sure that all the cops are from the community that they're policing, as opposed to, you know, looking for a career from somewhere else and bringing in foreigners and all that kind of stuff. Okay? So there are solutions to these problems, but I'm baffled by people who love liberty, who love the Constitution, and want to bash on Rand Paul and Ted Cruz and Mike Lee. Who are your alternatives? Mitch McConnell? Harry Reid? You know, I mean, give me a break. These guys are standing up for what the Constitution in principle stands for. Now, are they perfect? No. Are they getting it right every time? No. But they're getting it more right than anybody I've seen in a long time. Now, does that mean that we should all go rah, 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 Republican Party? No. Okay? I don't much care for the Republican Party. But on the federal level, until you change the ballot access rules, you get rid of the rigged voting machines, it's going to be a Republican or a Democrat every time. So if you want to move it in the right direction, support actually conservative Republicans. In the meantime, you better be working your ass off at your state level to open up the ballots, get rid of the voting machines, go back to paper and pen writing ballots, and then you can have independents and alternate parties galore, and then we can push that up through the states to the federal level. It'll take time. It took us 100 years to get here. We're not going to turn around tomorrow. But if you find the smallest issues and start throwing out crazy theories about the slippery slope and we've lost the country and go into survival mode, that's fine. We're not going to win that fight. Okay, the federal government has way too many arms and way too many psychotics that are willing to kill us. That is just a fight we should not be even entertaining having. It might come to that, but we don't have to actually allow it. In the meantime, let's do everything that we can to put the ship back on the right course. And that means getting involved in local tea parties, local groups of like-minded people who can move candidates, getting involved in political parties, whether Republican, Constitutional, Libertarian, what have you, and getting the agenda of the Constitution out there. And if you haven't read it in a while, pick it up. On 8x11 sheets, it's about 18 pages. It won't take that much time. And read a good commentary on it from one of the founding fathers, Addison chiefly, since he wrote it, to understand what is meant. Joseph Story has a pretty good commentary on the Constitution from a legal perspective. So understand what it means. And understand that in a country that is a republic, where the government, the federal government, is constrained by the Constitution, as a citizen, you will have more liberty and you will have more responsibility. Don't fear the responsibility. It is the duty and the price of liberty, and it is worth it every time. Because the soft servitude of tyranny, in order to give up some of that responsibility so maybe you don't have to work so hard, is never, ever worth it. So we'll see you next week. In the meantime, keep fighting for freedom, keep fighting for the Constitution, and you know what? It's good to have a debate with your friends, because that's how you sharpen your ideas, that's how you learn to get along better, and that's how you can champion the cause of liberty. This is Texan Rex, signing off.
Flames of liberty will never die.
and watch your thinking. I can free your sexuality. No one's ever tortured you with pleasure. Yes, sir.